Chapter 6. Luthor leaned back, feeling the pop and crackle in his joints, as an hour's worth of sitting in one position caught up with him. The last few uploads of simplified versions of old LexCorp tech designs onto websites, forums, and mailing groups were at last complete. The light in his lair was purely artificial, but he was certain it was morning already. He'd promised Bruce Wayne his tech to give away, but he hadn't promised it to him exclusively. The simpler, less efficient designs that he'd sent out would serve to get people's attention. Hobbyists and techie types would try to put them together and find that they worked, would no doubt be interested in more. There'd be those who had the training and intelligence to make changes and improvements. He'd limited it to technologies and discoveries that would be difficult to weaponize, limiting it to specific applications that could be used to improve people's lives. Obviously, there would be ways to turn nearly anything to less ethical uses, but he wasn't going to make it easy. It would cut into Wayne Tech profits if they did deign to bring the designs out, but in the long run, the attention would bring them more potential profits. He turned his neck, savoring the loud crackling pop. He never imagined that he'd turn LexCorp's technical database open source, but if there was anything that would attract the attention of his prey, it would be strange behavior, off-pattern things, every act calculated to be as uncharacteristic of Lex Luthor as possible. He blearily looked at the clock on his computer monitor, and realized that it was probably late enough that Eve Techmacher would be awake already. As limited as his current resources were, they were still considerable, and they needed careful tending. Miss Techmacher tended to whatever details Lex couldn't be bothered to pay attention to. He picked up the earpiece for his cell phone from its charging station on his desk and slipped it on. He tapped a speed dial button and waited for her to pick up. She worked out of her loft in Little Bohemia in Metropolis, an overpriced, underfurnished concierge that Lex had visited a few times. He'd asked her to move into LexCorp Tower a few times before it collapsed, but it was just as well she'd turned him down. After three rings, she finally picked up. Her voice was perky, cheerful, and had a broad streak of New Jersey that no amount of fancy elocution lessons would ever eliminate. "Good morning, Mr. L. How are you doing?"
"Forgot to sleep again, by the look of things, my dear Eve. It is morning, right?"
"Just a little after dawn, Mr. L. So it's close enough for government work." He could hear the sunny smile in her voice. She was a balm to his soul as much as her efficiency was a boon to his business.
"Did I give you a raise yet this month, Miss Techmacher?"
he said conversationally. He almost always asked her this. "Mr. L., I handle all your finances. I already gave myself a raise. And I cleaned out your Cayman Island accounts while I was at it."
He laughed. "If I thought for a minute you were telling the truth, I'd send Mercy over to your place to spank you."
"Mr. L.," her voice pretended shock, but her amusement shone through clearly. Lex never could understand how she could be such a morning person. He did fine during mornings, but usually as a result of not sleeping the night before. "You wouldn't do that. I mean, not unless you were coming along to watch, at least. I think Mercy might enjoy it a little too much. And I'd be kind of a waste if you didn't get to see." He gave another full-throated laugh.
"I'll have to think about that one, Eve."
"You do that, Mr. L.," she replied primly, but he was certain she was smiling.
"In any case, I didn't get a chance to chat with you yesterday. Was there anything that needed my attention?"
"Nothing big, Mr. L., although we did get a call back from Mr. Fox with Wayne Tech."
"Ah, I was expecting that. What did he say?"
"He wanted to confirm about Clause 17 on the manufacturing licenses you gave them."
"I assume you told him that Wayne Tech absolutely had to put the products out under the LexCorp label?"
"Of course, Mr. L. In fact, he said that Mr. Wayne suggested reincorporating the old Lex Medical with Wayne Tech's existing pharmaceutical division, to explore their options with those new drugs. They were looking at the original clinical trials, and were going to do some of their own studies before they asked for FDA approval."
"That sounds like a lovely idea, Eve.
Lex said, with a broad smile on his face.
It'll probably take them months or years yet before we can expect anything on the market, but at least they're moving forward now.
Miss Techmacher's voice came back across the earpiece, low and drawn.
Mr. L. Lex?
Yes?
Can I tell you something, sir? I mean, something really serious?
She sounded robbed of her usual vibrancy and surprisingly young. Lex knew she was in her early 30s, but she sounded like she was in her teens all of a sudden.
Of course, dear Eve. Anything.
Now, I know you don't like it when people second-guess you, or when they try to question your decisions.
Yes?
He prodded gently, not sure what she was trying to say.
This decision to give out your discoveries like you did, I know I argued with you about it, not making much economic sense, right?
That you did, he replied, then added, some things are more important than money.
I'm really glad I didn't talk you out of it, sir,
she said after a long pause.
I'm very proud of the decision you made. I'm very proud of you, and I'm very proud to be working for you.
Lex was dumbfounded. He'd had her loyalty from years before, and she'd always taken a certain fierce attachment towards him, but nothing like this. The tone of her voice was... He swallowed heavily and felt his eyes sting.
Thank you,
he said gravely, and was glad that he hadn't activated the videophone.
It would not do for him to look as choked up as he felt. Chalk it up to the long night. His emotions were a little too close to the surface, and his exhaustion kept him from his usual steely control. That means a great deal to me, Eve.
And if you ever, you know, decide to take me up on my offers, I am really serious.
He didn't need videophone to realize she was winking. The statement defused the atmosphere, and Lex found himself smiling again.
What, me and Mercy? He responded with mock astonishment.
Why not?
She laughed lightly, letting the tone drift back to the playful businesslike one that she often used in communications with him. A tap on the shoulder alerted Lex of company. He turned in his swivel chair and found Mercy in a short, fluffy bathrobe, arms crossed and with an eyebrow raised at him.
You and me what, Lex?
He put a hand over the earpiece, which did nothing at all to mute his voice, but gave the impression of it to the statuesque redhead.
I'm talking to Eve, Mercy.
He knew full well that Miss Techmaster was listening, and the laughter filtering into his ear was testament to that. Mercy sniffed at Lex.
You tell her if she really wants a good time, she ought to just see me. You have no stamina.
The renewed howls of laughter from his earpiece told Lex that Eve had heard her.
You know you are both my employees. I can fire you, he said with a scowl.
I handle HR and payroll, Lex. I just hire us both back, Eve replied.
Mercy, meanwhile, just smiled nastily.
By the way,
Mercy pointed a thumb back over her shoulder towards the mezzanine, where her room was.
There's something really weird coming out of the docks. I saw it from my window, and I figured the force fields could handle it. I thought you'd want to know.
Lex frowned slightly and tapped a few buttons on his keyboard. He glanced towards the slide panel, allowing the mists to clear to present a view of the outside. The warehouse was the size of a small car in the center of the cube. Lex adjusted another control, zooming the image out until the warehouse was the size of a small desk in one corner of the panel. At the opposite corner, rising out of the docks, was a huge, clunkily built humanoid form. Lex did a few brief calculations in his head based on the scale and realized that it was at least 50 feet tall. It stomped down the street, making a straight line for the warehouse. Every parked car in its path, and the street itself, became a target for its wrath, smashing through almost every single one with a single-minded determination. By the time it had made it to the first intersection, the only vehicle that hadn't been attacked was a white panel van, driving down the street, which had somehow escaped the giant's attention. Lex noted with some minor alarm that the part of the docks it had risen from, and crushed with its weight, was the closest exit for the escape tunnel under his home. That emotion was short-lived, however. What filled him more now was annoyance, just shy of anger.
"It kind of looks familiar," Mercy said mildly.
"It's chemo," Lex spat disgustedly. He could hear Miss Techmocker asking questions, but he realized a few other things, and said to her, "Eve, I'm going to have to cut this a little short. Something urgent's come up." Without waiting for a reply, he closed the connection and put the earpiece back on its charging station on the table. He tapped a few buttons on the keyboard and pulled up several websites on two of the smaller monitors surrounding his main one. From the angle she was at, Mercy couldn't see either clearly, but whatever it was, it obviously upset Lex, as he swore under his breath. He walked over to one of his workbenches, the one he'd set up for chemistry experiments, and began pulling a few bottles together.
"I've been expecting them to try something for weeks now, and this is the best they could do? Chemo.
Chemo? It's an insult, in more ways than one."
"What do you mean?" she asked.
He filled a flask with white, powdery substance from one of the bottles.
"The message here is obvious. They can make a mess of my life. Sending something that has a 5-word vocabulary is just a bit of an insult added to the injury."
"If it's an insult, it's an awfully big one," she said, eyeing the image on the panel.
He filled a large test tube with dull gray nuggets from another bottle.
"The other insult is that they made it painfully obvious who they've sent after me."
"It's taller than the warehouse, Lex. I think it would be obvious."
"I mean, I know who sent it. That means I'll finally have someone to interrogate once I take care of this thing."
He sealed the now-filled test tube with a rubber stopper.
"Whenever chemo is captured, it's held in a joint EPA and Department of Corrections facility in White Sands, New Mexico. The DEO has oversight. If any of those three agencies released it, there would have been a record on the DOC database of its release. I just checked, and as of midnight last night, chemo is still listed as a guest of the federal government."
"Go on."
"Chemo isn't exactly going to win any land speed records. There's no possible way it could get from White Sands to Hobbs Head Bay in under 5 hours, which tells me it was released much earlier, by someone who can bypass DOC record-keeping."
He put the test tube inside the flask and sealed it. He eyed it critically, then glanced back to the slide.
"That sound familiar to you?" he said with a tight smile.
Mercy didn't like the expression on his face, but knew exactly what he was talking about.
"Like Belle Reve?"
"Precisely."
He shook the flask and its payload thoughtfully. She shot the flask a worried look.
"What are you doing, Lex?"
"We can't let chemo get too close to the warehouse," he replied testily.
"Why?" Mercy asked.
"The field should keep it out long enough for the Boy Scout to take care of it, right?" His lip twitched, and he jerked a thumb over his shoulder at the other monitor he'd looked at.
"The Superwatch site has the Boy Scout over New Delhi right now, dealing with Cobra suicide bombers on a 6 commercial flights. He's going to be busy for at least a 30 minutes.
"The field can last that long, right?"
Lex nodded as he finished his preparations. For a moment, she wasn't certain if he was responding to her or to what he'd put together.
"Yes, the field could last that long, but this is chemo. At his current rate of progress, he'll be at the edge of the field in 10 minutes. In the remaining 20 minutes until the Boy Scout gets here, assuming he doesn't get distracted, chemo could eat his way through the foundations of the entire dock. The field may stay up, Mercy, but he could get us through the floor. Someone's directing him. He already broke through the escape tunnel and blocked it off."
He gave a disgusted shake of his head before turning back to the desk. He set the flask down and began rummaging through it.
"Did you go to the Lexmart last night?"
She was jarred by the sudden change in topic, and didn't respond for a few seconds. This prompted Lex to look up from his search and raise his eyebrows at her. She finally snapped out of it with a nod.
"Yes, I picked up some things while you were fiddling."
"Did you get your usual value-sized bags of snack pockets?"
"Yes,"
she asked, drawing the last S sound out, just a little out of suspicion. Although Lex was willing and able to live on junk food for extended periods,
when he was in the throes of his creative process, he loathed snack pockets. They were little pastries filled with various meats and cheeses that Mercy adored. "How many bags, Mercy?" he asked dryly. "Just a dozen," she replied defensively. He gave a shout of triumph as he pulled his keychain along with its remote control fob, free of the mass on his desk. In his other hand he held the fully assembled sonic pulse disruptor. Mercy noted with some relief that the safety on it was still on.
"That's about, what, close to 60 pounds of food, right?"
he asked a moment later.
"Yes, why are you asking?"
"I'm going to need it. Start loading all of it into..." he shrugged. "I don't know, pick one of the cars you don't like."
"Like the Jag?"
He gave her a look of distaste. "You only dislike the Jag because the upholstery has those stains on it."
"And the alignment's shot," she replied back. "Why are you picking on my snack pockets, Lex?"
"I need them to stop chemo,"
he responded before moving back to another of his work tables.
"I know you don't like them, but that's a bit extreme. You're going to feed him my snack pockets?" she asked incredulously.
"I'm going to feed him a bomb." He smirked, and she felt a little flutter in her stomach that she clamped down on, hard. She always liked how he looked when he was in crisis mode. She just wished she had his old security detail in LexCorp power armor handy. Hell, even the Secret Service guys would have been an improvement. Right now, all she had on hand to protect him with was her. He shooed her towards the freezer before fumbling with the key fob to raise the Jag and prepare it to exit the warehouse. It took Mercy just a few minutes to haul the big frozen bags of snack pockets, shoving them into the back seat at Lex's direction. He opened a large vacuum-sealed bottle that he'd gotten from a workbench and began dousing the cold, closed bags with the thick, tarry sludge. The flask of the powder that he'd had the test tube inside of, he shoved into the center of the mass in the back seat. It reeked with a cloying organic stench, and Mercy could swear that it was spreading a lot faster than it really should have. She gave a half-hearted sigh as she bid her delicious snackies goodbye. Another glance at the panel confirmed that chemo was most definitely headed towards the warehouse. It deviated every once in a while to break off a sign or pick up a car and shove it into its cavernous maw of a mouth. The sliding panel didn't provide any color, but Lex had no difficulty imagining the lurid, bright green of its interior. Lex was about to slide into the driver's seat when Mercy's glare stopped him cold.
"What do you think you're doing?"
"I'm going to drive," Lex replied, as though this was the most obvious thing in the world.
"Nice try. You're staying here. This is obviously going to be dangerous."
Lex favored her with a tight, unpleasant smile as he opened the garage door. Chemo was framed by the now-open door down the street.
"I'm not going to argue this with you, Mercy. I know what needs to be done. You don't."
"How hard could it be? I ram him with the car, and it explodes, right?"
She stood at her full height, summoning up all the dignity she could muster in her short bathrobe and bunny slippers. Lex shook his head and beckoned her over.
"No, no, no, I don't have time. You drive. I'm on shotgun."
He held up the disruptor.
"Drive towards him. I'm going to goad him into eating the car."
"I hope this doesn't get us killed, boss," she said as she revved the engine.
"You and me both," he shot back,
glancing over his shoulder to ensure that the black goop was now beginning to eat into the white-stained upholstery.
"Not that, Lex. It's just that I'm not wearing clean underwear," she said in a deadpan as the car shot out of the garage, aimed straight for Chemo's leg.
Lex laughed. "Well, at least if we screw this up, I'm going to die with a smile."
The Jaguar's finely tuned engine roared as she floored it. They were on a definite collision course for Chemo. The green giant paused in the middle of shoving another car into its mouth, catching sight of the car. Lex had his head and an arm sticking out of the window, trying to aim at the huge, toxic target. It was big enough to hit easily, but the car's motion wasn't helping. Chemo roared menacingly. Its limited mental processes being driven by insidious means came to the obvious conclusion that the approaching vehicle was some sort of danger to it. It hurled the crushed remains of the car in hand at the Jaguar. 3 tons of mangled, half-melted metal,
that was hurtling towards them did little to improve Lex's aim. He swore luridly and pulled his head back into the car, bracing himself uselessly. Mercy hadn't blinked. She slammed the brakes suddenly, giving the wheel a savage twist as she did so. The car skidded. The twisting and sudden change in its speed and orientation sent the chemo-propelled projectile slamming into the pavement short of their vehicle. The impact was so intense that the huge metal missile bounced. Mercy shifted suddenly, pounding the accelerator, sending the Jag surging sideways, sliding towards Chemo, with the passenger side on the leading edge of their skid. Lex noted absently that Mercy was cursing the front alignment roundly the whole way. The movement sent the car sliding under the bouncing metal, with only inches to spare. Smaller pieces fell away, peppering the Jag in a rain of edged metal and glass. Lex, noting how little distance still separated their vehicle from Chemo, flicked his gaze over his shoulder at the now completely ruined back seat. The black sludge had congealed and was now eating into the seat and upholstery. He eyeballed the amount and estimated that it was almost the right size. He took aim once more. Mercy was starting to get control back of the car from the skid, but it was a near thing. In the expanded moment when adrenaline filled the body and every second became an hour, Lex twisted the control to 10. He didn't consider Chemo to be a truly credible threat, but at the end of the day, it was still 50 feet tall, strong enough to tip buildings over, largely invulnerable, and completely filled with the most rampantly toxic and caustic substances known to man. Sometimes full power was the only correct response. The sonic pulse was only visible as a slight distortion in the air. A tightly expanding cone of concentrated sound shot forward to strike roughly where the knee would be on a normal human. Had that been a normal flesh-and-blood knee, even one on that scale, the results would have been horrific. A full kinetic force generated by the weapon would have liquefied bone and vibrated flesh so fast that it would have flashed to steam. The results on Chemo were far less dramatic in appearance, but no less profound. The only obvious intel result was a sudden profusion of bubbles exploding up and out from where the joint was. Its shell rippled and flexed as though someone had punched a half-filled water mattress. The gigantic construct gave an agonized cry, dropping to its good knee to clutch at the bubbling section. Lex considered that a good sign. Normally, the simplified soup of chemicals that served as Chemo's nervous system was immune to pain, but boiling those same chemicals was obviously enough to get its attention. The car's skidding was taking it straight to the pain construct at an uncomfortably high rate of speed. Lex pulled his arm back in, gritting his teeth and intending to duck as he realized the Jag was going to slam into Chemo, passenger side door, first. Before Lex could complete ducking on his own, he felt a hand close on his shirt front, dragging him with incredible strength and speed downwards. He felt his face pressed into Mercy's bare lap as she covered him with her own body. He thought to himself that under different circumstances, it would have been an interesting and pleasant experience. In fact, a slightly panicked and hysterical portion of his mind was prompting him to start making motorboat noises into her thighs. It was on that bizarre note that the car crashed into Chemo. Chemo was not having a great morning, and gave another pained howl as the car's impact disturbed the already agitated and boiled neurochemicals in its luridly green body. The entire passenger's side was staved in on Chemo's foot. The windscreen was spiderwebbed with cracks. The giant's face had twisted into as close an approximation of fury as it could get, given its limitations. It reached down, taking the car between its massive hands and lifting it. As it straightened up, bringing the ruined Jaguar with it, the driver's side door burst open. Mercy leapt out before Chemo could lift the car higher than 5 feet. She was dragging Lex behind her with an almost contemptuous ease. They were both covered in small cuts and bruises. The front of Lex's shirt had lost most of its buttons, while the tie on Mercy's robe had come undone, but not quite fallen open enough to be indecent. "Move, move, move!" she roared at him, dragging him along and trying to put distance between them and the captured car. Chemo squeezed the car between its hands, compressing it and twisting it into a shape that it could cram into its mouth. Lex had seen it do this before. It was Chemo's means of dealing with almost anything that upset it.
eat it, and let the stew of toxicity that served as his innards sort it out. It was exactly what Lex was counting on. Although he didn't quite count on having to get that close. In the original plan he had in his head, he would have been able to jump out before the car crashed into chemo. But no plan ever survives contact with the enemy. They took shelter behind a white panel van parked on the curb, an anonymous enough vehicle, but Lex suspected it was the same one he'd noticed earlier. "What's the rest of the plan, Lex?" Mercy asked. Lex peeked around the end of the van, noticing that the smashed remains of the Jag were now floating inside chemo. The material composing it was beginning to deform and fall away, entire sections peeling away and dissolving into the green that was chemo. Lex glanced down at his watch and nodded.
"I think we've given it enough time. You didn't get any of the gunk from the back seat on your clothes, did you?"
"No, no. What was that?"
"Just something I showed Bruce Wayne," Lex said with a smirk. "Any minute now."
Chemo gave another roar. The crushed car within its body was leaking some sort of dark substance that was not diluting into chemo. The creature was now squirming, dropping down to all fours as shudders racked its immense frame. Clutching and grasping fingers tore furrows into the street. The black stain within its body was spreading, and bubbles were flowing in steady streams out of the wrecked Jag. Within seconds, the stain had suffused a third of Chemo's substance. Lex cursed under his breath once more, glancing from his watch to Chemo, then back again.
"Almost any minute now."
Mercy could only stare. "You did this to Chemo with my snack pockets?" Lex folded his arms across his chest and smirked at her.
"I told you those things would kill you."
"No, seriously, what did you do to it?"
"Remember the garbage-eating bacteria I developed?"
"Yes. Didn't you give the design for it to Wayne?"
"Yes, yes. Remember what it does to what it eats?"
"Turns it into black sludge." Despite the situation, she smacked him on the shoulder. "You sludged my snack pockets?" Lex winced, rubbing at his shoulder, and continued crossly.
"The more of the bacteria we had on hand, the faster it converts more things into sludge. The beauty of exponential growth. I needed it to be big enough that it would be able to grow faster than chemo could kill the bacterial colonies. 70 pounds of organic material, eaten up by my little pets, would have just gotten it to the limit. Between the upholstery, the seats, and your groceries, we had just enough."
"So you sacrificed them to sludge chemo?"
"Not entirely. Chemo's too big to entirely convert before the growth limits I put into the stuff kick in. Worse, considering how quickly chemo can consume material and convert it to its own substance, if it takes too long, it'll recover."
"What exactly are we waiting for, then? How long is this going to keep it down?"
"We're waiting for that test tube to break, or the bacteria to eat through the rubber stoppers. But it's taking longer than I expected."
Lex glanced back down at his watch, then again at the convulsing giant. The black stain's rampant growth had spread through at least half of Chemo's substance, but it was clearly slowing. Any longer and it would reverse. The crushed Jag still floating serenely in the center of the black and green figure, like a jagged metal heart. Despite being nearly half blackened, Chemo was clearly recovering. It was rising to its feet again, and as much as any expression could be read on its face, it was furious. Its eyes swung to and fro, seeking the architect of its pain. It roared, stomping down hard on the already shattered pavement.
"Then what happens?" Mercy asked nervously, trying to force herself to be as small as possible behind the limited cover that they had.
Lex clicked his tongue, then looked down at the disruptor he still had in hand.
"I'm an idiot."
"What happens, Lex?" Mercy shouted at him, but he'd already stepped out from behind the van and was facing down Chemo, the disruptor in both hands, taking careful aim at the giant's chest. Chemo saw him and wasted no time. Despite its bulk, it started to run, charging Lex. Every motion was turned to the goal of reducing the man to a dirty smear at the bottom of one immense foot. Lex pulled the trigger, shooting Chemo in the chest with his sonic disruptor. The already crushed Jag shattered under the impact of the beam of sound. Then a curious thing happened. The black streaks and pools closest to its now broken metal heart flared, igniting within the enfolding green liquid,
Another scream came, this time from the van near them. Kimo's useless mouth mirrored that sound, opening soundlessly as the flames spread throughout the black petrochemical sludge and setting the green chemicals boiling. Kimo burned within its own plastic skin, mouth distorted in horror. It skidded to a stop, clutching at its chest uselessly as it pitched forward, face first. Its writhing was worse than before. The plastic was beginning to bubble and distort in spots, and every so often flames would pop out, flaring bright before the remaining plastic sealed over the opening, enclosing the flame once more. Lex grinned savagely, the fallen behemoth mere feet away from him, as he held up the disruptor in triumph. He called over his shoulder at Mercy. "That's what happens. This is what always happens when you mess with Lex Luthor." Mercy, despite herself, and despite having seen him in similar situations, was still very impressed, and more than a little turned on. He walked back towards the van, and to Mercy, who was realizing that one sleeve of her robe was starting to slide down her shoulder. He was speaking over the screaming. "Chemo's internal structure has a great deal of water. Water plus sodium results in an exothermic reaction hot enough to set white phosphorus on fire. White phosphorus burns hot enough to burn underwater. Fire hot enough to set long-chained hydrocarbons burning. The exact same type of flammable hydrocarbons my lovely little bacteria created out of Chemo's own body. The burn isn't fast enough to create an explosion, but more than sufficient to boil Chemo alive. Basic chemistry 1, Chemo 0. He casually flipped down the disruptor to a more sedate setting. He shattered the lock of the van and flung the doors open with a free hand. "Lex Luthor 1, Suicide Squad 0. He cried gleefully, keeping the disruptor pointed at the interior of the now open van. The vehicle was filled with surveillance equipment of every kind. There were a few chairs within, but they could be moved around easily. There was no passenger seat, and the driver's seat was set up in such a way that it could turn around to face the back area. The screaming was coming from a bearded midget in a ratted gray suit. His hair was a lank tangle, framing an unpleasant little face that was twisted in terrible pain. Further in the van, sitting on the contoured driver's chair and holding a pair of pistols on Lex and Mercy, was a mustached man in a tan overcoat. Beneath the coat, a distinctive red and gray uniform peeked out. The man had a greasy look to him that was reflected in the smirk he wore. "Luthor," the man greeted cordially with a nod. "Lawton," Lex called back pleasantly. He knew Deadshot. The man was a consummate professional whose services he had hired on more than one occasion. With the exchange of pleasantries, a fresh bout of screaming came from the writhing little troll of a man on the floor of the van. The bald man quirked an eyebrow at Floyd Lawton and asked, "Do you mind?" The other man gave a slight waggle of one of his guns and shrugged. "Go ahead." "Mercy," Lex said, "can you give us some quiet?"
"Sure thing, Lex," she replied, already having rearranged her robe to protect her limited modesty. She recognized the screamer as none other than Dr. Psycho, a misogynistic telepathic dwarf whose name was as good a description of him as any. Normally, she might not have been so sanguine about hitting a man who was already in so much pain, but in this instance, she was willing to make an exception. She cocked a fist up and punched down, hard, striking him in the jaw, causing his head to snap back and slam hard into the floor of the van with a dull clang, knocking him mercifully unconscious. At the moment of impact, Chemo gave a tremendous flinch, smashing the already wrecked street into so much rubble and making the van jump. Deadshot nodded appreciatively.
"He was getting on my nerves."
The whole time the guns remained trained on Lex and Mercy. Lex noted the slight tightening of the man's wrist. He was a fraction of a second away from pulling the triggers on the guns, but was hesitating only because of the disruptor in Lex's hands. Lex could understand Deadshot's concern. After all, he'd just apparently set Chemo on fire from the inside with it, so it wasn't a weapon to trifle with. But Floyd Lawton was a seasoned combatant. Lex could see him weighing the risks in his mind. Best to nip that in the bud now, he reasoned.
"How's the daughter?" Lex asked.
The tone was pleasant and friendly, but Deadshot read what he needed to from those three words. Lex knew about his kid. It implied all sorts of things that the mild tone did not convey. Lawton pulled his guns up and thumbed the safeties.
"Leave her out of it, Luthor. I'm serious,"
Deadshot said with dangerous emphasis.
"I wouldn't dream of it,"
Luthor said, sliding the disruptor into his pants pocket and holding his open hands out to Floyd.
"You've got a comms set up in this thing, Lawton. I need to speak with the Fat Woman." "Don't know what you're talking about." The man stuck his unshaven chin out with stubborn and convincing ignorance. "I can secure your cooperation in 5 words, Floyd. Do you really need me to say them?" Lex said mildly, leaning against the van's door.
Mercy had taken up her usual station next to him, doing her best to project dignity, despite the bedraggled nature of her torn robe.
"If you think you can get me to help you, you can try saying it."
Lex shook his head and spoke slowly and clearly.
"I can remove your collar."
Floyd's face split into an immense grin.
"Let me get her on the horn for you."